Chapter 15. Kill All the Shadows. I know you are my eldest brother, and in the gentle condition of blood you should know me. You are the firstborn, but the same tradition takes not away my blood, were there 20 brothers betwixt us. I have as much of my father in me as you. From As You Alike, attributed to the dramaturge Shakespeare, circa M2. "Make your report," Gilliman demanded into his armour's voxlink. He strode along the grand colonnade that linked the residency to the fortress proper, with the lion and an assembly of bodyguards from both legions at his heels. "Captain Turbis, my lord," the vox scratched back. Overlapping ambient noise suggested a great activity at the other end. We've found 3 men dead in the Portis yard, strung from the Aegis wall with wire."
"Our own men?"
3 ultramarines from 27th Company. Roster confirms they were on sentry duty. Wait, stars of Ultramar. 1 still alive. Hurry, hurry, cut him down, cut him down!"
"Wait," the lion cried, grabbing Gilliman's arm. "Tell them no, tell them..."
Despite the distance, they felt the blast. The voxlink scratched out, dead. A haze of red light glowed over the fortress wall, casting an infernal wash across the stately buildings of the Paleopolis.
"Turbis!" Gilliman yelled into the vox. "Turbis!"
"He mines the bodies," said the lion. "I've known him use the method several times. He takes munitions and grenades from those he slays or maims and sets them with time or motion triggers on the fallen. Such is his insidious poison. He spreads terror. We cannot trust our own dead."
Gilliman looked at Gorrod.
"Issue a warning to that effect. All channels."
"Aye, my lord," rumbled Gorrod.
Before the Invictus commander could begin the task, another ripple of blasts shivered the night air. This time, the detonations came from the direction of the Sword Hall. Beyond the fortress wall, Gilliman could see flames scudding from the lip of a roofline. He looked at the men with him and drew his gladius.
"He will commit no more injury," he said. "No more insult, no more outrage. Let it be known, we hunt him with maximum prejudice. No matter, he is our brother. All warriors are hereby notified to stop curs with lethal force."
On the piered western walkway that skirted the Praetorium, Titus Prato held up his hand sharply.
"Stop. Stop dead."
At his side, Captain Thales and his assault squad came to a sudden halt.
"What do you sense?" asked Thales.
"Something. He's here, or he was here," said Prato.
To the east of them, the blast of a grenade rang through the inner yards. Alarms and bells sounded from all quarters.
"He's everywhere, it seems," Thales murmured. "Are we sure he is alone? It feels like a strike force has infiltrated the fortress."
"We know nothing for sure, but I feel he is alone," said Prato. "This is his art. He moves fast and unpredictably. He leaves death and traps where he walks. Thus he is everywhere and nowhere. And so terror mounts."
Prato looked back along the walkway. Something had made him halt their urgent advance. He unclipped his lamp pack.
"We are ultramarines, Captain," Prato added. "He can sow all the terror he likes. We shall know no fear."
Prato had set his lamp to ultraviolet so that it might further enhance his transhuman ocular implants. He shone it along the walkway. The night's shadowed darkness was mottled with the glow of distant flames.
"There," Prato said. The hard light of his lamp caught wires stretched taut between the piers of the walkway at shin height. It showed them as sharp white lines. "Trip wires," he said. "He's wired the walkway. Thales, close off this area. Tell everyone not to enter by the western gate. You 3, start clearing these wires. Make them safe."
The ultramarines moved forward, clamping their bolt guns to free their hands. Another blast from the direction of the library lit the night above the walkway's roof.
"My lord," one of the men called out.
"What have you found?" asked Prato. "These wires, my lord. They are just wires. They are tied between the piers, but there's nothing attached to them."
"Even his traps are traps," Prato thought. "He binds us and blocks us, merely with the idea of death."
"More confusion," Prato said to Theos and the men. "Every action is designed to wrong-foot us, occupy us, delay us. He is the opposite of all he does." Prato turned to look back down the walkway, the way they had come. The shadow, standing silently behind them, smiled at him. Prato was fast, but a rush of inimical malice flooded his brain with stunning force. It was as though Kurz had kept his corrosive mind hidden, and now suddenly allowed Prato's sensitivity to read it. Claws scythed the air. Prato felt pain deep in his side. The impact hurled him sideways into one of the corridor's stone piers, which he bounced off with a clatter of plate. Before he even hit the ground, he was covered in blood. It belonged to Captain Thales. The officer was still standing, but his head had been removed. A considerable volume of blood was jetting from the stump of his neck, plastering the walkway like torrential rain. One of the squad members got off two shots, bright flashes and deafening noise in the covered space. Almost instantly, the man sailed backwards through the air, his bolt gun spinning out of his slack grip, his chest plating ripped open like torn foil. Despite the terrible wound in his side, Prato got to his knees, bringing his bolter to bear. He fought to discern which of the knight's shadows was Kurz. "There? There? Kill all the shadows!" he roared, and opened fire. The remaining men fired too, wildly, in all directions. The searing light of gunfire dispelled the darkness, and the furious bolt rounds ripped into the stonework of the piers and the walkway, filling the night air with dust, micrometal fibres, and physoline fumes. They kept firing until their magazines were empty. The pulsing, juddering flash of the shots showed them nothing but the emptiness of the shadows. Kurz had already moved on. But Kurz had let Prato taste his mind. Prato had him. Half unconscious with pain, the librarian opened his Voxlink. First Master Augustine heard the roar of bolter fire and turned.
"That sounds like a whole damn squad unloading," he roared. "Where is that?"
The sergeant beside him checked his auspex.
"Locator places the weapon discharge in the western walkway, my lord," he reported, "beside the praetorium."
Augustine's squad turned, weapons raised as warriors approached along the hallway. It was the lion's man, Holguin, and a band of his dark angels. They faced each other uneasily for a moment.
"Anything?" asked Augustine.
"He left grenades seated in the beds of the ornamental garden," replied Holguin, "and two more of yours dead outside the sacristy."
"I will have his head on a spike," said Augustine.
The vox crackled.
"This is Prato. Respond."
"Augustine," the first master replied.
"He was here, Freitas, at the praetorium. Where are you?"
"In the hall of the Eastern Communication."
"Then he's coming your way, Freitas. I can sense him. He's coming your way, and he's coming fast."
"Titus? Titus!"
The link was dead. Augustine looked at Holguin, his combi bolter raised.
"You hear that, Dark Angel? It appears we may be the ones to end this."
Holguin was holding his executioner's blade.
"It is an honour. I am happy to share," he replied.
Augustine gestured, and the ultramarines spread down the long, high-ceilinged hallway. The Dark Angels moved to the left, covering the closest of the doorways.
"This is Augustine," the First Master said into his vox. "I have it on good authority that our tormentor is moving into the Eastern Communication, heading towards the Chapel of Memorial. Available squads, close in. Block access to the Sword Hall and the Temple of Correction."
He waited.
"Respond," he hissed.
There was a shiver on the vox, distant static, like the dry skeleton of a voice.
"Rabute," it said.
"Who speaks?" Augustine demanded. Rabuti!
The dry crackle repeated. It was almost crooning the name.
Flames of terror, Augustine said, looking at Holguin. He's even inside the damn vox!
A bang made them all turn. The light bank at the far end of the communication went out. Quickly, in sequence, the other light banks along the hallway went out, each one with its own bang. Darkness marched towards them along the hall. The lights went out overhead, and then behind them. Then the lights were extinguished all the way to the far end of the communication. Silence. No emergency power cut in. No secondary lighting. It was as though the darkness had obeyed Conrad Kurz, and all light had fled from him in panic. Every helm visor lit up, ultramarines and dark angels alike. High-resolution enhancement searched the darkened communication for movement. Augustine and his men saw the area as a green twilight.
Rabuti,
the vox whispered. Suddenly Holguin was moving. The massive, round-tipped executioner's sword caught the infralight on its edge as it swung. There was a shadow, just a shadow. No, even less than that, just the hint or memory of a shadow. The blade caught something, a tatter of night. Then there was an impact, bloody and crunching. Holguin lurched backwards and crashed against the wall. The dark angel beside him seemed to pivot oddly. His side came open, armour and torso parting to release blood and slippery organs. Augustine began firing. They all began firing. In the rapid, hellish flash of the multiplying gunfire, Augustine turned full circle, hunting for his foe. He suddenly found a face immediately in front of his, just centimetres away, staring straight into his soul. The face had eyes like black suns, and skin as white as a bone desert, made sickly by the green infralight. Long, ragged black hair half stuck across the cheek and nose, glued by the blood of dead men. The mouth leered, revealing blackened teeth and blue gums. The leer stretched the mouth open, impossibly, inhumanly wide. Augustine heard laughter. He lunged at Kurz, firing his combi bolter. The face and the shadow, even the insane laughter, all vanished in a moment. In dismay, Augustine saw that his shots had felled a dark angel on the far side of the hall. Other men were still firing. It was madness, confusion. All discipline was lost. It had scarcely been seconds since the first instant of the fight. Augustine realized he was bellowing, expressing his fury as desperate non-words. Was this fear? Was this actually fear? He saw a legionary, an ultramarine, struck into the air. The warrior had been touched by nothing more than a piece of shadow, the tatter of a butcher bird's black ragged wing. But the impact was as though he had been fired from a cannon. Flailing, he struck one of the hall's great windows, shoulders first, and went through it in a blistering cascade of broken glass. The helm of an ultramarine sergeant rolled along the stone floor at Augustine's feet. There was still a head in it.
"Face me!" Augustine roared. "Face me like a man, you coward, you night thing!"
Kurz's answer was a clawed hand that punched through ceramite, armoured under mail and fibre sheaves into the living gut. Augustine fell forward, blood spewing out of the eviscerating wound. So much blood had come out of the dead ultramarines and dark angels that there was almost a pressurized tidal flow along the communications floor. The darkness stank of blood, the blood of good space marines. Kurz paused for a second, a towering skeletal shadow in the twilight, one clawed hand raised, clutching steaming ropes of Augustine's viscera as some ragged trophy.
"I'm not dead yet, you bastard!" Augustine spluttered, bubbles of blood froth bursting at his lips. Soaked almost head to foot in his own gore, he came at Kurz with the executioner's sword clenched in his right fist.
From inside the candle-lit chapel of memorial, The sounds of the Night Haunters' campaign of terror could be distinctly heard. The alarms, the frantic vox, the sounds of running feet, gunfire, the random detonation of grenades and other devices from the east, the west, from every quarter.
"It sounds as though a war rages through the fortress," said the vision of Warsmith Dantioch. "Be thankful you are not here," replied Alexis Pollux. "I've heard many tales of Kurz's malevolent and vicious talents, but this night he seems to be excelling himself."
Pollux glanced around as power failed in the hallway outside the chapel. He could smell burning. He drew his bolt pistol, favouring his right hand, not his healing new one.
"I believe our audience for the day is over," said Pollux. "I must take my leave and assist my brothers in halting this madness." "Then I bid you farewell in your efforts, Pollux," said the warsmith.
Pollux glanced back at Dantioch icily, as if the earnest wishes of an iron warrior were more of a damnation than a blessing. Three ultramarines suddenly entered the chapel, weapons drawn, hunting for targets. When they sighted Pollux, they lowered their aim.
"Has he come this way?" demanded the officer.
"Kurz? No," replied Pollux.
"This area must be secured," the officer told the two legionaries with him.
"You think he's close?"
Pollux asked, walking towards him.
"He's everywhere," the officer replied grimly. "The order came, kill all the shadows. I thought that was nonsense at first, but he is like a demon."
"He is a son of the Emperor," Dantioch said from the lustrous vision of Sotha's tuning floor behind them. "He is a demigod. It is not possible to overestimate his potential."
Dantioch had risen uneasily from his high-backed chair and come to the very edge of the communication field.
"Beware,"
he said suddenly, looking around as he responded to the empathic vibrations of the quantum field.
"My dear brothers, beware."
All the candles in the chapel blew out. The sudden gloom was wreathed with tendrils of grey smoke roiling from the wicks. Now the greater proportion of light came from the polished cavern on Sotha, falling into the night-struck chapel through the communication field, and illuminated the room in an uncanny fashion. The chapel had four sets of double doors, one at each compass point. The doors at the north end splintered open, demolished by brute force. Two figures came through, locked together, reeling across the chapel's broad, paved floor. One was First Master Augustine, a raw-headed spectre drenched from head to foot in blood, Holguin's long blade in his hand. The other was Darkness Manifest, a bigger, crueler, more elongated shape, an insubstantial horror, the fleeting, ragged shadow left on the ground when a rook flies fast across a winter sky. Pollux and the ultramarines rushed forward. The combatants were so interlocked that it was impossible to take a shot without risking Augustine. Pollux hesitated, watching in horror. The Night Haunter seemed as a wraith, a mosaic, a suggestion of claws, of a ragged cloak, of long hair straggled and streaming, of a face white as a bared skull, of a black leering mouth.
"He's here!" the ultramarines officer yelled into his vox. "The chapel! The chapel!"
Augustine fell, broken, spent. He landed on his knees, and for an instant Pollux could see the appalling damage that had been wrought upon him. The First Master had been ripped open and gutted, half his face torn off. That Augustine was still moving spoke to his courage and transhuman thresholds. The executioner's sword was no longer in the First Master's hand. Hurled, it crossed the chapel like a spear and impaled the ultramarines officer through the neck before he could repeat his call. He fell, drowning noisily in his own blood, air whistling out of the holes in his throat. Pollux and the two ultramarines opened fire, but there seemed to be nothing to hit.
"For terror's sake, Pollux,"
Dantioch yelled from the edge of the communication field.
"Flee! You can't fight him! Flee now! Regroup!"
Claws came out of the smoking darkness and sheared through one of the ultramarines. The other ran forward, firing repeated shots that hit nothing except his slain comrade. Darkness twisted around him, and his head turned through 180 degrees with a brittle crack. The ultramarine fell across his comrade's corpse.
"Pollux, run, brother, run!"
Dantioch yelled in exasperation. Pollux had frozen. He turned slowly, bolt pistol raised, darkness melting and flowing around him. Silence hissed and breathed like a living thing. He could feel the monster close at hand. He could feel stinking evil circling him in the darkness. Nearby, Augustine let out a terrible gurgling sound. Spasms shook his kneeling form as death finally overwhelmed him. He toppled onto his side.
"You've killed many tonight, monster," Pollux told the darkness, still turning, still hunting. "None, I doubt, as great a warrior as that man now expired. None, I doubt, that put up so furious a fight against your evil. I hope I last half as long."
The silence breathed.
"Moreover," said Pollux, "I hope I bathe in your blood before the night is done."
"To your left!"
Dantioch yelled. Pollux swung and fired. He heard something. Had he actually made contact? Drawn blood?
"To your right!"
Dantioch shouted. Pollux turned again and fired two more rounds. The warsmith was using the field's empathic vibrations to read the darkness and detect the night haunter's movements.
"Where now?" Pollux yelled back. "Where is he?"
"At your back!" Dantioch roared.
Pollux wheeled, but he was not fast enough. He took a glancing blow that knocked him to the floor, hard. The bolt pistol skittered away from him across the flagstones.
"Move!"
Dantioch cried. Pollux rolled sideways, desperately. Claws came out of the nothingness, sweeping in a downstroke that split the flagstones where he had been lying. He struggled forward on hands and knees, groping for his fallen weapon.
"No, keep moving!"
Dantioch yelled. Pollux hurled himself aside again as the claws came again and again. He was almost on top of the fallen ultramarine. Heedless, frantic, Pollux wrenched the executioner's sword out of the man's neck.
"Left! Left!"
Dantioch cried. Pollux struck left with a long blade once, twice.
"Ahead!"
Pollux swung another blow. With this one, he felt a contact through the hilt. Speckles of black blood dotted the flagstones. He had left a mark. He would make a good account of his death, as Augustine had.
"Right and behind!"
Dantioch shouted. Pollux put his weight into the sword as he turned and felt the heavy blade rebound off claws. There was a shower of sparks as the Caliban-forged steel deflected Kurz's talons. Pollux followed the block with another swing and then another wild strike, hoping to keep the monster at bay. The Dark Angel's sword was so large that Pollux realized he was instinctively using both hands, old hand and new, clamped expertly around the grip. He feinted left, and then chopped into the darkness to the right, and then ahead.
"Guide me, warsmith. Where is he?"
"There, to your left,"
Dantioch exclaimed, pointing uselessly at the dark within the darkness. Pollux struck hard to his left. He could smell the stink of something in the gloom, feel the heat of its rage. It was an unwashed smell, the smell of a diseased animal. It was like fighting all the beasts of Inwit's Nightside at once.
"Left, now!"
Pollux roared at the effort as he struck with the blade. He connected again. He felt it.
"Did I cut you?" he asked the darkness. "Do you bleed?"
The answer was a blow to the face that smashed Pollux to the floor. Dazed, he tried to recover. His mouth was full of blood. He could hear Dantioch yelling his name, telling him to move. He couldn't clear his head. Another blow, a kick most likely, caught him in the belly and sent him rolling across the chapel floor. The sword was no longer in his grasp. There was no air in his lungs. He spat blood. He had ended up right at the edge of the communication field, bathed in the eerie light of Sotha. Dantioch was standing over him, yelling in helpless rage and frustration, apparently centimetres away, yet actually light-years distant. The warsmith's anguish was terrible. He could do nothing but watch and cry at Pollux to get up and scream obscenities at the thing in the dark. Pollux tried to rise. Everything went very still. He could hear curs breathing, panting like a dog. He was aware of the night haunter beside him, standing over him, the tips of the long, long talons slowly, almost delicately scraping across Pollux's armour, about to flex and strike.
"Yes, I bleed," rasped a death-rattle voice, "but not as much as you are about to, Imperial Fist."
Pollux flinched, braced for the killstroke. A gauntlet seized his left hand and pulled. It pulled with immense power. It pulled him sidelong and out of the way so that Kurz's scything death blow missed entirely. Pollux looked up to see who could have entered the fight and intervened. But only three were present. Pollux, the Shadow of Kurz, and the Warsmith. Dantioch had a tight grasp on Pollux's new left hand. The air was cool and smelled entirely different. The acoustics around him had changed. Pollux was no longer in the chapel. He was on the tuning floor on Sotha.
"Dantioch, I don't have an answer," the Warsmith replied.
They looked back. Kurz, a towering, leering shade, cheated of his prey, gazed back from the darkness of the chapel. He reached out a handful of talons and tried to touch them, but they were as solid as smoke. Where Pollux had passed across, Kurz could not.
"You will tell me," Kurz hissed, spittle flecking between his blackened teeth, "how this is done, how this is achieved."
"The faith and will of good men," replied Dantioch, "when they stand together against infamy, the galaxy fights for them."
"I would hardly put my trust in the galaxy," Kurz hissed.
He was so thin, so tall, a cadaverous herald of death.
"I have seen what it dreams of, and it is quite run mad."
His leering smile faded away.
"Now come back where I can kill you," he said. "I believe neither of us will accept your offer, Night Lord," said Dantioch. "Furthermore, I believe you are about to have more pressing matters to concern you. Augustine and Pollux have between them kept you here longer than you meant to stay."
Behind Kurz, light flooded into the chapel as two sets of doors opened, the south and the west entrances. Framed in the south, blade drawn and flanked by ultramarines, stood the Avenging Sun. "Back off," Gilliman told his men. Rage smouldered from him like a heat haze. "This wretch is mine." "No," said the Lion, leaving his dark angels at the threshold of the west doorway and striding forward. "He is ours."
"Well, now," murmured Conrad Kurz, hooking down the left-hand corner of his lower lip thoughtfully with the tip of one extravagant, bloodied claw.
"Interesting."